You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, the Biden administration has continued tariffs on Chinese imports that were put in place by the Trump administration. U.S. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo said this week that the U.S. Trade Representative's office is reviewing those tariffs to evaluate their effectiveness, but that the White House has no plans to change them at this time. The continuing tariffs on China are just one example of where President Biden has taken a different approach on trade compared to the Obama and Clinton administrations. Biden has also shied away from striking new trade deals and invested more in domestic manufacturing, energy, and infrastructure compared to previous Democratic administrations that leaned more on international commerce. We're learning more about how U.S. trade policy has shifted over time and how that could shape debate over the economy heading into the 2024 election. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the way Biden has handled trade policy? Do you want to see tariffs on China remain in place? How do you feel about the investments in manufacturing and infrastructure? How about things like supporting microchip manufacturing here in the country, trying to lower dependence on foreign sources? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Avik Chakravarti is an associate professor of economics at UW-Milwaukee, where he researches international trade and finance. He's a faculty affiliate at the Northwestern Mutual Data Science Institute. Avik, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Big picture, Avik, how do you look at the Biden administration, how it's approached trade policy? What has struck you over the last couple of years?
Well, like you said, I think every listener of yours, as well as those who are eager to see the America First agenda that President Trump had put in place. We see some very encouraging trends in the current administration that has definitely distinctively deviated from what we had seen before President Trump. And the idea is the only way that a country can be put first, a country as prosperous as the United States, is by making sure that other countries do not take advantage of it. So I think that what President Trump had put forward is an agenda that's coming to fruition. And I think that irrespective of any political outcome, President Trump's initiatives will show over time to be very, very effective. And I think that, you know, future presidents from either party we'll have to embrace it like we see President Biden embracing it during his first term.
Yeah, President Trump talked more, I think, and more loudly about his changes to trade policy. Have you seen much change, though, from the Trump to Biden administrations on this issue, on things like tariffs and protectionism?
What we have seen in terms of changes, if we look through a microscope, if you will, is most recently, if you look at just before the political trips to China. If you look at the economics of it, you notice that some key sectors, like technological sectors, are going to be affected even more than before through President Biden's executive order. And the only distinction you see is in terms of focus on sectors. For example, if you look at computing chips or quantum technology as a broader term, or artificial intelligence, microelectronics, these are places where we are seeing greater emphasis, more targeted emphasis. However, that said, though, I have to say that when President Trump talked about all of these in the aggregate, it was the earliest credible signal being sent to our then largest trading partner, now probably in the third place after Mexico and Canada, which is China now, which recently been ranked third rather than first. But overall, the idea that President Trump put forward through his dialogues and efforts to diplomatically resolve the disputes with China were very much in line with what we are seeing today, with even more focused, even more forceful, forceful impositions of restrictions. And my prediction during President Trump's tenure was that had he been in office today, we would have seen similar, if not stronger, restrictions on China.
Talking to Avik Chakrabarti from UW-Milwaukee, Associate Professor of Economics there, looking at U.S. trade policy. some common themes in the Trump and Biden administration's departures from what we had seen from Democrats and Republicans in the years before that. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Avik, I think there was a consensus maybe before the 2016 election. There's a debate between the idea of, okay, we want free trade that might hurt some American manufacturing, but it'll bring benefits to consumers in terms of cheaper goods, versus no, the priority should be protecting American manufacturing. Leading Democrats and Republicans went for that free trade formula. Now we saw Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump in 2016 arguing against it. Now Biden, as you suggest, joining them. What do you think led people to move in that direction?
See, we always needed a very effective leader like President Trump to come in and make it clear to the public that the United States was being taken advantage by other countries in various forms, including countries in Europe. So we shouldn't single out China, but the point is that economically speaking, on the trade platform, China, whether we strongly use the word taking advantage or they were simply pushing their Make China Great agenda, but President Trump brought back Make America Great Again, in the sense that somehow the leaders in this country at various levels, local all the way up to the national levels, were apparently becoming oblivious of the fact that there were trade agreements with other countries, including this Section 301 that President Trump boldly brought back into our limelight, is that many aspects of this Trade Act of 1974. So this goes back so many decades. Like we're talking about an era where many of our listeners may not even been interested in economics and politics. But in 1974, we had this agreement, which was greatly violated by many countries. And the reason China comes to limelight is because China became the largest trading partner with the United States, and we had the largest trade deficit. So the question was, how can we reduce our dependence on one country, diversify our trade, but most importantly, level the playing field? And without President Trump's bringing this into the limelight, I think that we would still be wondering why were there such strict tariffs, such sudden imposition of restrictions on a single country like China. Why was it important? And this is the importance of it, that we need to level the playing fields. If we want free trade like those who saw before President Trump, we also need fair trade. We need other countries to free up their trade too, if they want to freely trade with us. That's pretty much the message that President Trump sent, and I think that any administration, including the current, would continue to send in the near future.
There were concerns during the Trump administration about retaliation. So, you know, some farmers here in Wisconsin may have had less favorable opportunities to sell to China than they had previously. The idea that, you know, we were escalating a trade war, in effect, that was hurting all sides. Did you see some of that happening?
Absolutely, absolutely. And see, this is why having an economically highly sophisticated mind in the White House was important. So while we saw President Trump as our political leader, we also saw an economic mind at work. So it was difficult to fool President Trump through Washington politics. So he understood that there would be retaliation, because it's impossible to not have retaliation from the world's soon to become maybe the largest economy in the world, surpassing us, China, not population-wise, of course, but population-wise, India is the largest economic democracy that you can imagine. But in terms of economic power, you have China, right? They're competing neck to neck with the United States, and retaliation was definitely anticipated. So what President Trump did was he essentially said, okay, fine, I mean, if you hurt our farmers, we will subsidize our farmers using the tariff money, the revenue that we have through these tax impositions, which are called tariffs in international economics. No difference between tariffs and taxes, it's just on foreign producers. And once you take the money from foreign producers, give it to our farmers, that signals to foreign countries that if you keep doing it, if you retaliate, we will be doing enough to help our segments of the population that are being hurt. At the same time, we want to keep in mind that President Trump also clearly saw that because we import so much more from China, like if you think about even, modified figures, we are looking at almost four times the amount of values of imports that were hurt by tariffs by President Trump's initiative on China, whereas China could only retaliate by imposing tariffs to the extent of a couple of hundred billion or shy of that. We had more than $550 billion worth of goods from China that were being affected. So China was going to be affected by more because it would soon run out of options to impose retaliations on us. And that's clearly because we were running such a large deficit with China. So I think all of these went into the calculation when President Trump went ahead and initiated this this signal, if you will, which the Biden administration is carrying through till date, with small reversals. You know, if you notice, there's been a little bit of softening in the tone with the three visits to China, one political visit, one military visit, and one most recent economic visit, that we think we are trying to soften a little bit. But softening will be effective only if the trading partners, including China, softens their stance as well.
We're talking to UW-Milwaukee economics professor Avik Chakrabarty about how the Biden administration has handled trade policy, how that compares to President Trump and other predecessors. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think about President Biden's approach to trade, former President Trump's approach to trade? What would you like to see the White House focus on? Join in at 800-642-1234. Does this affect your livelihood one way or another? 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk with Avik Chakrabarty, Associate Professor of Economics at UW-Milwaukee, who researches international trade and finance. With us today to look at White House policy on trade, tariffs, China, and domestic investment. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's more important to you? Free trade, maybe allowing cheaper consumer goods into the country, or boosting American industry, manufacturing, agriculture? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hello.
Hi, thank you for having me. It sounds like what Biden did is took some of the parts of the Trump policies that were working out and kept them, and then actually took, in addition to that, care of some issues that Trump wasn't dealing with or was dealing with in a terrible way. I'll say that one of the failures I feel of the Trump administration is that he never put a carbon tariff on China, because China actually puts out more carbon dioxide than the U.S. in terms of global warming. And Biden has not done that, but he has tried to deal with global warming when dealing with other countries. And he's also encouraged domestic investment, so that if we can get our economy to change in time enough, we can avoid some of the worst impacts of global warming. Additionally, I think that Biden just has a better foreign policy, in that NATO is still intact. And if Trump was given a second term, that is very much in question.
Nate, thanks for the call. Avik, I want to zoom in on Nate's idea using trade policy as a tool, a stick, I think, to get other countries to help fight climate change. What do you think of that idea?
Absolutely. That's a very useful idea. But at the same time, I listened to what Nate said, and I, like many who would agree with Nate, that the environment is something for us to protect, not only for us, but for generations to come. And while Nate may not have followed that during Trump administration, and during even before President Trump's administration, during President Trump's administration, and carrying on to President Biden's administration, there is always an overarching concern about the environment. The question is, to what extent do we push the environmental agenda so that we are not hurt immediately without being prepared? For example, take the energy crisis, right? Any intelligent economist or strategist would say that we were not prepared for the energy situation that we're in now. So trying to say that we're saving the environment but then putting more pain, which we did not even take into account, would be not so prudent policy. So I think that the environmental agenda is absolutely justified. It's a long-run perspective we need to take, because remember that the environment was degraded by not by one president, but by many presidents in the past, if you want to blame any president. So when President Trump came in, he was trying to protect our energy sector, where we were trying to become not only self-sufficient, but sometimes to the extent exporting to other nations. This was important not only to make our country more resilient, but also to reduce any kind of dependency that might cause more harm to us, particularly in the strategic sectors. So I agree with Nate that environment is important, and I agree with the components of Biden and President Biden's policies that are protecting the environment. And I think it's in line with President Trump's work as well.
Nate, thanks for the call. Avik, I wanted to get into the Trans-Pacific Partnership. There's this idea, again, criticized by then 2016 presidential candidate Bernie Sanders and then candidate Donald Trump, very opposed to the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. One of the hopes of supporters was, hey, it's going to bring the United States together and Pacific powers against China in some ways, as a competitor to China. Is there a value in doing some kind of arrangement like that that gives the U.S. and its allies advantages over China as an economic competitor?
Yes, yes. In fact, you know, going back to your reference to President Trump's position on TPP, the Trans-Pacific Agreement Partnership in particular, essentially what President Trump was trying to do is trying to diversify our dependence on other countries. Because when you were dependent on one country like China or, you know, Canada or Mexico at one time, it makes us more vulnerable. So the idea is to diversify as much as possible. And the country that President Trump had in mind, very rightfully so, was India. Because if you look at India and make a comparison with China, India is the largest populous economic democracy that you can see on the face of Earth. So there is, and the young democracy. So if you look at the age composition of Indian population, it's more productive, it's more young. So bringing in India into the picture without having a broader net was the initiative that President Trump took. I remember President Modi, Prime Minister Modi, president here is most powerful. The Prime Minister in India is most powerful. So Prime Minister Modi visited the United States, and there were very good relationships that were being built. And that's been continued over time through this current administration. And like I said, irrespective of political changes, I think that this type of an expansion of relationship between United States and other Asian economies, or trans-Pacific economies, if you will, without needing any new contracts or agreements in place, would be highly welcome. So I think the idea is to replace one country or three countries, like, you know, Canada, Mexico, and China, instead of replacing them entirely, just diversify competition, extending hopefully to at least India, which holds a lot of promise for the rest of the world in generations to come.
Time for one more caller. Willem is with us in Colfax. Willem, hi.
Hi. I think, you know, you've been praising the Trump administration quite a bit for their economic policies and what a positive effect they have had on America. But a really negative effect on America in his policies was the calling of climate change a hoax, and that ceding that sort of industry to other countries like Denmark and China. And, you know, basically this other policy of including more countries is basically these countries are used for cheap labor. So we have a poorer working class that can afford cheap products from China and India and other nations.
Willem, thanks for the call. Which part of that do you want to tackle, Avik? We just have a minute or so left.
Yeah, sure. And let me give me a little raise a flag if I'm going over time. But the way to respond positively to your question, to your caller's question, is to say, look, it takes some time to adjust. So that's my point. So President Trump called the environmental agenda hoax to the extent that it was done without us being prepared to deal with it. So it's one thing to say that he completely was not interested in environment. That is absolutely not true. He did want the environment to become cleaner for
Climate change, he did flat out call it a hoax, a Chinese hoax in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, see, keep in mind that the president of the United States cannot be blamed for everything, but we tend to do that. But what's but essentially what President Trump was trying to do when he called it a hoax is he intended to say that it's being misused by people to reduce the self-sufficiency of certain sectors in the United States. So while the environment needs to be clean, and the climate change has to be brought about, but it should not be turned into a hoax. That's what he meant, to promote certain agenda that are not beneficial to our generation or the future. So I think that, bringing in more countries, the other part of the question, which may have vices, for example, your caller mentioned, like poor lay workers, child workers, of course, those are humanitarian grounds on which we have to be careful. But we need to keep in mind that the reason that people are poor in other countries is because they don't have an option to earn more. So if we trade more with them, they will earn more. They will send less of their children to work and send them to school. So trade is a way of reaching out to countries which are in need for assistance, not foreign aid, but essentially kind of getting into a situation where we can continue to be the leader of the free world.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Avik Chakrabarty, Associate Professor of Economics at UW-Milwaukee, where he researches international trade and finance. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, a bill in the state legislature aims to boost access to breast cancer screenings. We'll hear from two of the sponsors and a breast cancer survivor who's making the case for that change. That and more tomorrow on Central Time.